We're about to talk with Judy Chaikin. Her film, The Girls in the Band, will be appearing tonight at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, April 17th, tonight, downtown, 830 East Pratt Street. The film is an amazing film. You can just go to rflewismuseum.org or call 443-263-1800 to find out. But Judith Chaikin is a graduate of the American Film Institute's Directing Workshop for Women. She's produced and directed many Emmy-nominated films, and she's producer and director of this incredible documentary, as I just said, The Girls in the Band, that's won Audience Choice Awards, Best Music Documentary Awards, Best Feature Documentary Awards, and festivals around the country and around the globe. And Judy Chaikin, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I love the way you open this film. That iconic photograph of all these jazz musicians, most of them black men, that was taken, and you hone in on this famous person, Thelonious Monk's here, and Count Basie's here, and all these men are here. But who are these two women?
Right. Well, you know, when you're making a film, you're always looking for the opening and the closing of the film, because if you get those right, everything else kind of falls in between. And it took us a long time to find that, because we were already out doing interviews and we knew what the film was going to be about. But at one point, I kept saying to myself, you know, it's amazing. There's all these incredible women out there and nobody knows who they are. And look here in this great iconic photograph, there's two women and nobody knows who they are. And then I thought, well, maybe that's the way to open the film. So that's what happened. So we decided to, you know, start it by asking the question of who are these two women? And then that really kicked off the whole film. And then, well, I don't want to give away the ending, but...
No, we won't go to the end. But I mean, the two women were a white musician and a black musician.
Yes. It was Marion McPartland, the white piano player, and Mary Lou Williams, who was the black piano player. And they were the two women who were in that iconic photo. And, of course, when we finished the film, the only one still alive was Marion McPartland. Who has now passed away. So we're really pleased that we got Marion on film.
For years, she was one of the iconic figures on National Public Radio with her jazz show. She was
exactly.
She was amazing. Yeah.
Great radio show that we all love to listen to.
She's a great lady.
Yes.
But what was interesting is that those two women were in that photograph, but what unfurls in this film is the this world of women musicians, jazz musicians, playing every instrument under the sun that most people, unless they are really deep into jazz and the history of jazz, would ever known have existed.
And, you know, Mark, the truth is that even guys who are deep into the history of jazz have not heard about most of these women. It was such an awful time for women who had any kind of talent or gift or love of, their craft or their art. Because even though if they were great enough to get some recognition, there was never a path for them to follow to get a career. So they might get a gig here and there where people would say, oh, my God, isn't she a great musician? But that didn't mean anybody would call them up the next day and hire them. So they were always, you know, beating this path in a world that had no really way for them to express themselves. It was a very hard time.
As you built this film and you found women to interview, you found there were so many threads into this movie about who these women were, and I just want to pull out some of them because I think they're really important. I love the piece early in the film with Hazel Scott playing piano. And is it Valdelia Snow who comes on then?
Valeda Snow,
right. And starts talking about this and the instruments women played and what they were allowed to play and not, and well, not allowed to play, but what they were known for. But it was just, that to me was, there's so many moments like this in the film that just pop out and grab you that they make the whole movie.
You know, I was having those moments as we were making the film. I was seeing these things and hearing these things. And every day we would just sit around and go, oh, my God, do you believe this? Look at this. Look at this player we found. When we found footage on Vi Red playing saxophone.
That was amazing. Yes.
We were just we were stunned. It was really a sad thing that nobody knew about them.
People didn't know about a lot that was in this film, and you take a lot of time talking about the International Sweethearts of Rhythm.
Yes.
Their story, that sojourn between those women, the ones you had interviewed,
Yes.
I mean, we don't have to give everything away. Obviously, I want people to see this, but we won't be doing that by doing this. Talk a bit about this group, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm. By the way, the music you're hearing under us is their music. But talk a bit about this group of women.
Well, this was a group of women that came out of a school for underprivileged girls in Mississippi. It was called the Pinewood School.
Which still exists, by the way.
Pardon?
It still exists.
Oh, the Pinewood School has become a very famous school.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. The Lawrence C. Jones, the man who started it, really had a solid foundation for what a school could be and how it could serve the underprivileged children in the South. And that school has become quite famous. Anyway, they started there as a way to help raise money for the school because it was popular in those days where you would have a singing group or, some kind of a performance group from a school would go out and they'd do events at churches and at dances and stuff like that. So they started this group of all girls, and this band turned into such a successful and hot band that it eventually left the school and went on to be a professional band. But it was an all-black band, so at that time, no black bands got to play anywhere in the North or in the white ballrooms, which is where you became famous. They were all sort of, hidden away in this secondary world. Well, the International Sweethearts of Rhythm, because they were all girls in a big band, had trouble filling some of their chairs sometimes, and they hired a white girl to be on the band. And the story of what happened to her and what happened to them is really a major, and as you said, I won't tell everything, but it's a major part of this story. And it talks not only about bands and music, but about our whole social structure and what was happening at that time. And what I find is that a lot of young people don't really know about this.
No.
You know, they may know who Martin Luther King was, and they may know about what the freedom marches were and things like that. But they do not have a sense of what life was like prior to all that. So the film is quite eye-opening on that level.
Without giving, again, a lot of it away, I think what's important here is that the storylines in here about going south and about having one a white woman in the band and the complexion of some of the people in the band and the confronting segregation and jazz musicians being arrested in the South because they dared to kind of play in integrated groups or the these women we're talking about and that they then went off to play with the for the Tuskegee Airmen and went in Europe in the midst of battle to play for men. It's just this, and this group of women, mostly black women and one white woman, doing this together. It's just it's just an amazing story. I pride myself on knowing some history and things and music as well, but I'd never heard of this before.
I know. I didn't either. And I come from a musical family and a musical background, and I had not heard of any of these women except Marion McPartland. And I happen to know who Clora Bryant was because I live in California, and she had made quite a stir in the music scene. My husband was on a band with her. So those were the only two women that I really knew about.
And the head of that band, if I remember, is Anna Mae Winborn, right?
Who
was kind of the musical and spiritual leader of the band.
Yes, a wonderful woman. And the women on the band just sing her praises. And she was so smart and so savvy and knew how to navigate through the difficulties of those times. So it's a big tribute to her, too.
And just seeing these women in this film, clearly older now, black and white women, who played, again, saxophone, trombone, trumpet, drums, guitar, whatever, everything.
Right.
Now reflecting on their lives and that world, to me, was pretty stunning because, again, I guess it was because whenever we see films about music and musicians and jazz musicians in particular, and that they're always men talking. And here are these women reflecting on the music, reflecting on their lives. I found that pretty profound.
Yeah, it is. It's quite amazing because you see they had really full lives and they were fully invested in what they did as musicians. And yet they were completely left out of all the history books. It was as if they didn't exist. So that's the great feeling that I get from having made the film, is that I've given voice to these voiceless women who were so incredible and strong and brave and talented and courageous.
Yes.
And now they have a place in history.
And you've done that. I mean, I think that the piece that just struck me, because not that I was shocked, but just I'd never read it before, but I'm not surprised by it. We have these headlines in the film, why an article is written in I think it was Downbeat,
right?
Why women are inferior musicians.
Right.
Or the man saying they can only play, they play piano well because there's no heavy lifting, or
the
men.
They're not strong enough.
They're not strong enough to do it. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can see from those things that it wasn't just a passive resistance. It was quite an aggressive resistance against women. You know, I think it's hard enough to be a musician, and you think you've carved out this little territory, and you don't want to let anybody else in, especially women.
Right.
So, you know, that's how things happen in life.
It was a male domain. Again, I just want to come back to something we talked about a bit in the beginning. I'm curious about, I mean, clearly you had a great deal of passion to make this movie. What did you walk away yourself with from this film, from this project? Because when you start a project like this, whether it's a book or a documentary film or a play or whatever that might be, you know, you start one place and all this stuff unfolds as you're doing the project, and then at the end you kind of sit and go, oh my God. You know what I mean? I mean, what happened to you during the course of this, and what did you walk away with that was different?
Well, you know, I made the film because it's not unsimilar to what I experienced as a woman director. And I had a music in background, a background in music, so it kind of all fell into place for me to make this film. But when I came away from it, I came away with a new sense of courage myself about what it takes to be a woman in a man's world and what you have to do and how hard you have to work and how determined you have to be and how you cannot let anyone say no to you and have it stop you in any way, because there's just nothing but going on. And it gave me encouragement as a woman filmmaker.
Well, I think you made a marvelous film here, and I've just really taken with it. I only saw it on my computer. It needs to be seen on the big screen.
Absolutely.
I just think I learned so much. The documentary footage, the interviews with the women themselves, now older women, about their experiences, the whole question of race and music and the women themselves and the battle they fought as women, the incredible music they created, as good as any music that we remember today. And I think people will watch this film and then want to go find recordings of some of these women who they did not know.
Yeah.
Who were as good as Charlie Parker or anybody else.
Yes, absolutely. And the one thing I do not ever want people to forget about the film is that it's pretty funny, too.
It's very funny.
Some of these women.
These women are hilarious.
Really funny.
Yes.
You'll laugh a lot.
Because they look at the situation, and they, no matter how serious it was, whether it was misogyny or racism or whatever it was, they look back at it with the humor of looking back, knowing who you are and what you've done.
Exactly. So that's the level of the film that I enjoy the most. That they're not downtrodden or beaten down by what happened to them.
Hell,
they've
no.
Risen above it personally.
Well, this is an amazing film, Girls in the Band, and I really encourage everyone to come out tonight to the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. You can just show up, 830 East Pratt Street. It's open to the public. You can go to rflewismuseum.org or call 443-263-1800 for information, but it's Girls in the Band. It's tonight. You do not want to miss the film. It's just going to be, you'll love it. I'm just in love with this film, and I think you will be as well. And Judy Chaykin, thanks so much for the work you do and for joining us today and creating this film.
Thank you, Mark. I hope you have a wonderful screening there and that everybody enjoys it. And thanks for talking to me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break.